we would lay maybe 100 pictures out on a table and then pick out the ones that told the story the best and then start writing the captions in the pictures. So, you know, from the standpoint of all the books written on the kidnapping and trial, this is the only one that has ever been done as a pictorial history. So,
now, are you staying true to the actual story and the case itself, or,
right, yeah,
or do you start to bring up and constantly review the vagueness of it?
Are going just as the story developed, and, you know, from the... Well, the first chapter of the book is about Lindbergh and how popular he was. I have a large memorabilia collection, and most of the pictures in there are of items that tell the story of Lindbergh, how he became popular, and why he wanted to find seclusion. And then it goes into Highfields, the actual kidnapping, the search for the baby throughout the Saraland Mountains and into Hopewell Township and in that general area. And then after they find the baby in May of 1932, then the search for the kidnappers. And then picking up Bruno Hauptmann in the Bronx, extraditing him back to New Jersey, the trial. And then there were a series of appeals, and then he was eventually executed. We found great pictures of the state prison and pictures from inside the prison, the hearse that carried him out to Long Island. He was cremated out there. They had thousands of German-Americans line the streets who thought he was innocent the entire time. And, you know, that's pretty much the book. There are no theories in there.
Okay. Sure.
Although over the years, Mark and I have compiled a list of 17 different theories of who kidnapped the Lindbergh baby. And it's interesting, you read some of these books that are out, and you get done reading, say, oh, man, that sounds like it's really what happened. And then you put that down and pick up another one totally opposite of that, and you come away feeling, yeah, that's what happened, too. You know, Bruno Hauptmann sent a letter to Governor Hoffman, the last thing he ever wrote. And the last line of the letter, which is the last page in her book, his letter is the last page in her book, the last line is, I am totally innocent, and because of that, this is a case that will never die, and it'll be researched forever. And
I guess that explains it.
Yeah.
I guess, why do you think that's true? Do you think that that's the reason that people keep investigating this, or is it the fact that technology is not as mature as it is today, and the media wasn't as mature as it is today, and so there always is that gape, that hole, that of possible other situations.
Well, I have to tell you, it's when you start looking into this kidnapping, it's a lot like who assassinated JFK. I speak a lot on Lindbergh. And I always like to draw that parallel because you can read as many books on the JFK assassination and walk away just as confused as when you started. But I recently gave a talk up in New Providence, and the topic of my talk was 12 theories of who kidnapped the Lindbergh baby. And let me tell you, they go the whole gamut from...
I don't know if that's a sign.
It's entering the twilight zone.
Yeah.
They go the whole gamut from Lindbergh did it himself to Bruno Hauptmann acting as the lone kidnapper, which is what the state tried to prove. You know, it's very interesting when you get into this case. The New Jersey State Police from day one thought it was an inside job and part and it was done by a gang. And that was their theory until they picked up Bruno Hauptmann 3 years later and they said, you know, we've been made to look like buffoons. We want to end this right now. and we're going to fry this guy and be done with it and put this behind us. They mm-hmm. were actually investigating four or five other groups of people that, when you look at the investigative evidence, it seems like any of these people could have been involved. But because Haltman had the money in his garage, they said, no, he's not part of a gang, and extradited him, convicted him, and executed him.
Mm-hmm.
So, but there's tons of evidence. But going back to these other theories, I mean, he was doing it himself. He was part of a gang. There was a lot of thought that members of the Morrow family may have been involved. They investigated Ann Morrow's sister, Elizabeth, mm-hmm. because of her jealousy. They investigated the brother who was in a mental institution and escaped a day or so before the kidnapping. And Dwight Morrow actually had an illegitimate son who was cut out of the will.
Mm-hmm.
And he was supposed to have gotten $50,000 in the will. And Mrs. Morrow said, no, you're not getting that. He says, well, I'm going to get my $50,000 one way or another. He was investigating it,
wow.
really. Actually, and there's another book coming out, which I have to say I heard the author speak about it not too long ago. And I really like this theory. It's called The Willows. And that refers to a horse farm that used to be over where the Mercer County Mall is now on Route 1. And when Bruno Haltman was picked up and extradited, a priest in Michigan contacted the New Jersey State Police, and he says, I know this guy. He says, I used to be a priest in Trenton, and we had a big addition being built on our church, and this architect lived out at this horse farm called the Willows.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to go out there all the time, and on numerous occasions I met Bruno Haltman and three or four other people, and he named the names, some of whom were being investigated. And one day he went out there, and the plans for the Lindbergh house were open on a table, and Haltman says, well, you don't have to worry about this. We're going to take care of Lindbergh. And apparently the architect, whose name was Bruno Wagner, had bid on that Lindbergh house and didn't get the job and was totally out of sorts over it. So they decided to get even. So that's one. That's another book coming out.
Wow. It's just not going to die.
I know.
All right, well, we're at the half-hour break there, Jim, so we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back and talk a little bit more detail and perhaps some more theories. So you're listening to Good Morning Huntington, huntingtonchamberradio.com. We're going to come right back with more of Jim Davison and his new book about the Lindbergh trial right after this. You're listening.
The way we broke up the responsibilities, my job was to locate the pictures, and then we would scan them, and then Mark and I would work on doing the captions together.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, the way we worked on it is I wrote the intro and captions, and then he went back and rewrote them, and that's what we ended up having as the final draft.
Okay.
So finding these pictures was exciting, but also not the easiest thing. Somebody had told me that I should check in the Jersey City library in their archives, that they might have pictures there because Jersey City detectives were very involved with the trial and investigating the kidnapping. So I went up there, and this little woman came to me and said, how did you know about these pictures? Nobody has ever seen these pictures.
Wow.
And
why wasn't she giving some of this away?
Yeah, she was not very forthcoming. And hopefully she's not listening to this broadcast, because we were kind of devious when we did this.
Okay.
They had over 300 pictures.
Wow.
Related to the Lindbergh kidnapping. And she said, well, you're not going to take all 300 and just do your book with them. And I said, well, that's not what we were looking for. We were looking for pictures that we hadn't seen, pictures that would be relevant. Anyway, mm-hmm. it ended up that I think we scanned maybe 25 or 30 pictures and maybe used 8 mm-hmm. from the library. But then I knew, because I sit on the Hunterdon County Cultural and Heritage Commission, that Mildred Larrison, who used to be the county clerk and during the time of the Lindbergh trial was an assistant to that. She was only a teenager. She was an assistant to the county clerk, had taken a lot of pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And they were, when she passed away, they were given to the County Cultural and Heritage Commission. And they ended up in the Hunterdon County Archives, which is up on Route 12 in Flemington, in one of the buildings behind the library, sitting on a shelf. And outside of a couple of people, nobody had ever seen or used these pictures. There had to be 50 pictures there.
Wow.
And then I went to the Hunterdon County Historical Society and talked to Terry over there, the archivist, and he says, you know, it's really funny. We don't have many pictures at all from the Lindbergh kidnapping period. But just last week, somebody going in a flea market in New York State saw an entire packet of pictures from the Daily News photographs or photographers.
Mm-hmm.
And we just got them, and quite frankly, I haven't even looked at them. And I looked at, and there had to be about 50 or 60 there. Anyway, this kept going on and on like this. We got pictures at a Hopewell Museum, Hopewell Township, Princeton, private collections in New York City. It ended up that we found over 1,000 pictures that had never been seen. And under the format of Arcadia, the next problem we had was you only could use a little over 200.
Right.
So we had to go through and pick and choose not only the best pictures, but the ones that would tell the story in a chronological fashion.
Wow.
So we would decide on what the chapter was going – well, it was a chronology chapter, so it wasn't that hard to figure out what came next. But
right.
We would lay maybe 100 pictures out on a table and then pick out the ones that told the story the best and then start writing the captions in the picture. So, you know, from the standpoint of all the books written on the kidnapping and trial, this is the only one that has ever been done as a pictorial
mm-hmm.
History. So
now, are you staying true to the actual story and the case itself,
or
do you start to bring up and constantly review the vagueness of it?
Are going just as the story developed, and you know, from the. Well, the first chapter of the book is about Lindbergh and how popular he was. I have a large memorabilia collection, and mm-hmm. most of the pictures in there are of items that tell the story of Lindbergh, how he became popular, and why he wanted to find seclusion.
Mm-hmm.
And then it goes into Highfields, the actual kidnapping, the search for the baby throughout the Sarilan Mountains and into Hopewell Township and that general area. And then after they find the baby in May of 1932, then the search for the kidnappers.
Mm-hmm.
And then picking up Bruno Hauptmann in the Bronx, extraditing him back to New Jersey, the trial.
Yep.
And then there were a series of appeals. And then he was eventually executed. We found great pictures of the state prison and pictures from inside the prison, the hearse that carried him out to Long Island. He was cremated out there. They mm-hmm. had thousands of German-Americans line the streets who thought he was innocent
mm-hmm.
the entire time. And, you know, that's pretty much the book. There are no theories in there.
Okay. So.
Although over the years, Mark and I have compiled a list of 17 different theories of who kidnapped the Lindbergh baby. And it's interesting, you read some of these books that are out, and you get done reading and say, oh, man, that sounds like it's really what happened. And then you put that down and pick up another one totally opposite of that, and you come away feeling, yeah, that's what happened too. That, you know, Bruno Hauptmann sent a letter to Governor Hoffman, the last thing he ever wrote. And the last line of the letter, which is the last page in her book, his letter is the last page in her book. The last line is, I am totally innocent, and because of that, this is a case that will never die and it'll be researched forever. And
I guess that explains it.
Yeah.
I guess, why do you think that's true? Do you think that that's the reason that people keep investigating this? Or is it the fact that technology is not as mature as it is today, and the media wasn't as mature as it is today? And so there always is that gape, that hole, that of possible other situations.
Well, I have to tell you, it's when you start looking into this kidnapping, it's a lot like who assassinated JFK. I speak a lot on Lindbergh. And I always like to draw that parallel, because you can read as many books on the JFK assassination and walk away just as confused as when you started. But I recently gave a talk up in New Providence, and the topic of my talk was 12 theories of who kidnapped the Lindbergh baby. And let me tell you, they go the whole gamut from...
I don't know if that's a sign.
It's entering the twilight zone. Yeah. They go the whole gamut from Lindbergh did it himself to Bruno Hauptmann acting as the lone kidnapper, which is what the state tried to prove. You know, it's very interesting when you get into this case. The New Jersey State Police from day one thought it was an inside job and part and it was done by a gang. And that was their theory until they picked up Bruno Hauptmann 3 years later and they said, you know, we've been made to look like buffoons. We want to end this right now. And we're going to fry this guy and be done with it and put this behind us. They were actually investigating four or five other groups of people that... When you look at the investigative evidence, it seems like any of these people could have been involved. But because Hauptmann had the money in his garage, they said, no, he's not part of a gang, and extradited him, convicted him, and executed him. But there's tons of evidence. But going back to these other theories, I mean, he was doing it himself. He was part of a gang. There was a lot of thought that members of the Morrow family may have been involved. They investigated Ann Morrow's sister, Elizabeth, because of her jealousy. They investigated the brother who was in a mental institution and escaped a day or so before the kidnapping. And Dwight Morrow actually had an illegitimate son who was cut out of the will. And he was supposed to have gotten $50,000 in the will. And Mrs. Morrow said, no, you're not getting that. He says, well, I'm going to get my $50,000 one way or another. He was investigating it, really. Actually, and there's another book coming out, which I have to say, I heard the author speak about it not too long ago. And I really like this theory. It's called The Willows. And that refers to a horse farm that used to be over where the Mercer County Mall is now on Route 1. And when Bruno Hauptmann was picked up and extradited, a priest in Michigan contacted the New Jersey State Police, and he says, I know this guy. He says, I used to be a priest in Trenton, and we had a big addition being built on our church, and this architect lived out at this horse farm called the Willows. And I used to go out there all the time, and on numerous occasions I met Bruno Hauptmann and three or four other people, and he named the names, some of whom were being investigated. And one day he went out there, and the plans for the Lindbergh house were open on a table, and Hauptmann says, well, you don't have to worry about this. We're going to take care of Lindbergh. And apparently the architect, whose name was Bruno Wagner, had bid on that Lindbergh house and didn't get the job and was totally out of sorts over it. So they decided to get even. So that's one. That's another book coming out.
Wow. It's just not going to die.
I know.
All right. Well, we're at the half-hour break there, Jim. So we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back and talk a little bit more detail and perhaps some more theories. So you're listening to Good Morning Huntington, huntingtonradio.com. We're going to come right back with more of Jim Davison and his new book about the Lindbergh trial right after this.
You're listening.
The way we broke up the responsibilities, my job was to locate the pictures, and then we would scan them, and then Mark and I would work on doing the captions together. Mm-hmm. And actually, the way we worked on it is I wrote the intro and captions, and then he went back and rewrote them, and that's what we ended up having as the final draft.
Okay.
So finding these pictures was exciting, but also not the easiest thing. Somebody had told me that I should check in the Jersey City library in their archives that they might have pictures there because Jersey City detectives were very involved with the trial and investigating the kidnapping. So I went up there, and this little woman came to me and said, how did you know about these pictures? Nobody has ever seen these pictures.
Wow.
And
why wasn't she giving some of this away?
Yeah, she was not very forthcoming. And hopefully she's not listening to this broadcast because we were kind of devious when we did this.
Okay.
They had over 300 pictures.
Wow.
Related to the Lindbergh kidnapping. And she said, well, you're not going to take all 300 and just do your book with them. And I said, well, that's not what we were looking for. We were looking for pictures that we hadn't seen, pictures that would be relevant. Anyway, it ended up that I think we scanned maybe 25 or 30 pictures and maybe used 8 from the library. But then I knew, because I sit on the Huntington County Cultural and Heritage Commission, that Mildred Larrison, who used to be the county clerk and during the time of the Lindbergh trial was an assistant to that. She was only a teenager. She was an assistant to the county clerk, had taken a lot of pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And they were, when she passed away, they were given to the County Cultural and Heritage Commission. And they ended up in the Huntington County Archives, which is up on Route 12 in Flemington, in one of the buildings behind the library, sitting on a shelf. And outside of a couple of people, nobody had ever seen or used these pictures. There had to be 50 pictures there.
Wow.
And then I went to the Huntington County Historical Society and talked to Terry over there, the archivist. And he says, you know, it's really funny. We don't have many pictures at all from the Lindbergh kidnapping period. But just last week, somebody going in a flea market in New York State saw an entire packet of pictures from the Daily News photographs or photographers.
Mm-hmm.
And we just got them, and quite frankly, I haven't even looked at them. And I looked at, and there had to be about 50 or 60 there. Anyway, this kept going on and on like this. We got pictures at a Hopewell Museum, Hopewell Township, Princeton, private collections in New York City. It ended up that we found over 1,000 pictures that had never been seen. And under the format of Arcadia, the next problem we had was you only could use a little over 200.
Right.
So we had to go through and pick and choose not only the best pictures, but the ones that would tell the story in a chronological fashion.
Wow.
So we would decide on what the chapter was going. Well, it was a chronology chapter, so it wasn't that hard to figure out what came next. But we would lay maybe 100 pictures out on a table, and then pick out the ones that told the story the best and then start writing the captions and the pictures. So, you know, from the standpoint of all the books written on the kidnapping and trial, this is the only one that has ever been done as a pictorial history. So,
now, are you staying true to the actual story and the case itself?
Or
do you start to bring up and constantly review the vagueness of it?
We are going just as the story developed, and, you know, from the – well, the first chapter of the book is about Lindbergh and how popular he was. I have a large memorabilia collection, and most of the pictures in there are of items that tell the story of Lindbergh, how he became popular, and why he wanted to find seclusion. And then it goes into Highfields, the actual kidnapping, the search for the baby throughout the Sarilan Mountains and into Hopewell Township and in that general area. And then after they find the baby in May of 1932, then the search for the kidnappers. And then picking up Bruno Hauptmann in the Bronx, extraditing him back to New Jersey, the trial. And then there were a series of appeals, and then he was eventually executed. We found great pictures of the state prison and pictures from inside the prison, the hearse that carried him out to Long Island. He was cremated out there. They had thousands of German-Americans lined the streets who thought he was innocent the entire time. And, you know, that's pretty much the book. There are no theories in there.
Okay.
Although over the years, Mark and I have compiled a list of 17 different theories of who kidnapped the Lindbergh baby. And it's interesting, you read some of these books that are out, and you get done reading, say, oh, man, that sounds like it's really what happened. And then you put that down and pick up another one totally opposite of that, and you come away feeling, yeah, that's what happened, too. You know, Bruno Hauptmann sent a letter to Governor Hoffman, the last thing he ever wrote. And the last line of the letter, which is the last page in her book, his letter is the last page in her book, the last line is, I am totally innocent, and because of that, this is a case that will never die, and it'll be researched forever. And
I guess that explains it.
Yeah.
I guess, why do you think that's true? Do you think that that's the reason that people keep investigating this, or is it the fact that technology is not as mature as it is today, and the media wasn't as mature as it is today? And so there always is that gape, that hole, that of possible other situations.
Well, I have to tell you, it's when you start looking into this kidnapping, it's a lot like who assassinated JFK. I speak a lot on Lindbergh, and I always like to draw that parallel because you can read as many books on the JFK assassination and walk away just as confused as when you started. But I recently gave a talk up in New Providence, and the topic of my talk was 12 theories of who kidnapped the Lindbergh baby. And let me tell you, they go the whole gamut from
I don't know if that's a sign.
It's entering the twilight zone. They go the whole gamut from Lindbergh did it himself to Bruno Hauptmann acting as the lone kidnapper, which is what the state tried to prove. You know, it's very interesting when you get into this case. The New Jersey State Police from day one thought it was an inside job and part and it was done by a gang. And that was their theory until they picked up Bruno Hauptmann 3 years later and they said, you know, we've been made to look like buffoons. We want to end this right now and we're going to fry this guy and be done with it and put this behind us. They were actually investigating four or five other groups of people that, when you look at the investigative evidence, it seems like any of these people could have been involved. But because Haltman had the money in his garage, they said, no, he's not part of a gang, and extradited him, convicted him, and executed him.
Mm-hmm.
So, but there's tons of evidence. But going back to these other theories, I mean, he was doing it himself. He was part of a gang. There was a lot of thought that members of the Morrow family may have been involved. They investigated Ann Morrow's sister, Elizabeth, mm-hmm. because of her jealousy. They investigated the brother who was in a mental institution and escaped a day or so before the kidnapping. And Dwight Morrow actually had an illegitimate son who was cut out of the will.
Mm-hmm.
And he was supposed to have gotten $50,000 in the will. And Mrs. Morrow said, no, you're not getting that. He says, well, I'm going to get my $50,000 one way or another. He was investigating it,
wow.
really. Actually, and there's another book coming out, which I have to say I heard the author speak about it not too long ago. And I really like this theory. It's called The Willows. And that refers to a horse farm that used to be over where the Mercer County Mall is now on Route 1. And when Bruno Haltman was picked up and extradited, a priest in Michigan contacted the New Jersey State Police, and he says, I know this guy. He says, I used to be a priest in Trenton, and we had a big addition being built on our church, and this architect lived out at this horse farm called the Willows.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to go out there all the time, and on numerous occasions I met Bruno Haltman and three or four other people, and he named the names, some of whom were being investigated. And one day he went out there, and the plans for the Lindbergh house were open on a table. And Haltman says, well, you don't have to worry about this. We're going to take care of Lindbergh. And apparently the architect, whose name was Bruno Wagner, had bid on that Lindbergh house and didn't get the job and was totally out of sorts over it. So they decided to get even. So that's one. That's another book coming out.
Wow. It's just not going to die.
I know.
All right, well, we're at the half-hour break there, Jim, so we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back and talk a little bit more detail and perhaps some more theories. So you're listening to Good Morning Huntington, huntingtonchamberradio.com. We're going to come right back with more of Jim Davison and his new book about the Lindbergh trial right after this.
You're listening.
The way we broke up the responsibilities, my job was to locate the pictures, and then we would scan them, and then Mark and I would work on doing the captions together.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, the way we worked on it is I wrote the intro and captions, and then he went back and rewrote them, and that's what we ended up having as the final draft.
Okay.
So finding these pictures was exciting, but also not the easiest thing. Somebody had told me that I should check in the Jersey City library in their archives, that they might have pictures there, because Jersey City detectives were very involved with the trial and investigating the kidnapping. So I went up there, and this little woman came to me and said, how did you know about these pictures? Nobody has ever seen these pictures.
Wow.
And
why wasn't she giving some of this away?
Yeah, she was not very forthcoming. And hopefully she's not listening to this broadcast, because we were kind of devious when we did this.
Okay.
They had over 300 pictures.
Wow.
Related to the Lindbergh kidnapping. And she said, well, you're not going to take all 300 and just do your book with them. And I said, well, that's not what we were looking for. We were looking for pictures that we hadn't seen, pictures that would be relevant. Anyway, mm-hmm. it ended up that I think we scanned maybe 25 or 30 pictures and maybe used 8 mm-hmm. from the library. But then I knew, because I sit on the Hunterdon County Cultural and Heritage Commission, that Mildred Larrison, who used to be the county clerk and during the time of the Lindbergh trial was an assistant to the – she was only a teenager. She was an assistant to the county clerk, had taken a lot of pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And they were – when she passed away, they were given to the County Cultural and Heritage Commission. And they ended up in the Hunterdon County Archives, which is up on Route 12 in Flemington, in one of the buildings behind the library, sitting on a shelf. And outside of a couple of people, nobody had ever seen or used these pictures. There had to be 50 pictures there.
Wow.
And then I went to the Hunterdon County Historical Society and talked to Terry over there, the archivist. And he says, you know, it's really funny. We don't have many pictures at all from the Lindbergh kidnapping period. But just last week, somebody going in a flea market in New York State saw an entire packet of pictures from the Daily News photographs or photographers.
Mm-hmm.
And we just got them, and quite frankly, I haven't even looked at them. And I looked at, and there had to be about 50 or 60 there. Anyway, this kept going on and on like this. We got pictures at a Hopewell Museum, Hopewell Township, Princeton, private collections in New York City. It ended up that we found over 1,000 pictures that had never been seen. And under the format of Arcadia, the next problem we had was you only could use a little over 200.
Right.
So we had to go through and pick and choose not only the best pictures, but the ones that would tell the story in a chronological fashion.
Wow.
So we would decide on what the chapter was going – well, it was a chronology chapter, so it wasn't that hard to figure out what came next. But
right.
We would lay maybe 100 pictures out on a table and then pick out the ones that told the story the best and then start writing the captions in the picture. So, you know, from the standpoint of all the books written on the kidnapping and trial, this is the only one that – has ever been done as a pictorial mm-hmm. History. So
now, are you staying true to the actual story and the case itself, or
right,
or do you start to bring up and constantly review the vagueness of it?
Are going just as the story developed, and you know from the. Well, the first chapter of the book is about Lindbergh and how popular he was. I have a large memorabilia collection, and mm-hmm. most of the pictures in there are of items that tell the story of Lindbergh, how he became popular, and why he wanted to find seclusion.
Mm-hmm.
And then it goes into Highfields, the actual kidnapping, the search for the baby throughout the Sarilan Mountains and into Hopewell Township and right. that general area. And then after they find the baby in May of 1932, then the search for the kidnappers.
Mm-hmm.
And then picking up Bruno Hauptmann in the Bronx, extraditing him back to New Jersey, the trial.
Yep.
And then there were a series of appeals. And then he was eventually executed. We found great pictures of the state prison and pictures from inside the prison, the hearse that carried him out to Long Island. He was cremated out there. They mm-hmm. had thousands of German-Americans line the streets who thought he was innocent
mm-hmm.
the entire time. And, you know, that's pretty much the book. There are no theories in there.
Okay. So.
Although over the years, Mark and I have compiled a list of 17 different theories of who kidnapped the Lindbergh baby. And it's interesting, you read some of these books that are out, and you get done reading and say, oh, man, that sounds like it's really what happened. And then you put that down and pick up another one totally opposite of that, and you come away feeling, yeah, that's what happened too. That, you know, Bruno Hauptmann sent a letter to Governor Hoffman, the last thing he ever wrote. And the last line of the letter, which is the last page in her book, his letter is the last page in her book, the last line is, "I am totally innocent, and because of that, this is a case that will never die, and it'll be researched forever." And
I guess that explains it.
Yeah.
I guess, why do you think that's true? Do you think that that's the reason that people keep investigating this, or is it the fact that technology is not as mature as it is today, and the media wasn't as mature as it is today, and so there always is that gape, that hole, that of possible other situations?
Well, I have to tell you, it's when you start looking into this kidnapping, it's a lot like who assassinated JFK. I speak a lot on Lindbergh. And I always like to draw that parallel, because you can read as many books on the JFK assassination and walk away just as confused as when you started. But I recently gave a talk up in New Providence, and the topic of my talk was 12 theories of who kidnapped the Lindbergh baby. And let me tell you, they go the whole gamut from...
I don't know if that's a sign.
It's entering the twilight zone. Yeah. They go the whole gamut from Lindbergh did it himself to Bruno Hauptmann acting as the lone kidnapper, which is what the state tried to prove. You know, it's very interesting when you get into this case. The New Jersey State Police from day one thought it was an inside job and part and – it was done by a gang. And that was their theory until they picked up Bruno Hauptmann 3 years later and they said, you know, we've been made to look like buffoons. We want to end this right now. And we're going to fry this guy and be done with it and put this behind us. They were actually investigating four or five other groups of people that... when you look at the investigative evidence, it seems like any of these people could have been involved. But because Hauptmann had the money in his garage, they said, no, he's not part of a gang, and extradited him, convicted him, and executed him. So, but there's tons of evidence. But going back to these other theories, I mean, he was doing it himself. He was part of a gang. There was a lot of thought that members of the Morrow family may have been involved. They investigated Ann Morrow's sister, Elizabeth, because of her jealousy. They investigated the brother who was in a mental institution and escaped a day or so before the kidnapping. And Dwight Morrow actually had an illegitimate son who was cut out of the will. And he was supposed to have gotten $50,000 in the will. And Mrs. Morrow said, no, you're not getting that. He says, well, I'm going to get my $50,000 one way or another. He was investigating it, really. Actually, and there's another book coming out, which I have to say, I heard the author speak about it not too long ago. And I really like this theory. It's called The Willows. And that refers to a horse farm that used to be over where the Mercer County Mall is now on Route 1. And when Bruno Hauptmann was picked up and extradited, a priest in Michigan contacted the New Jersey State Police, and he says, I know this guy. He says, I used to be a priest in Trenton, and we had a big addition being built on our church, and this architect lived out at this horse farm called the Willows. And I used to go out there all the time, and on numerous occasions I met Bruno Hauptmann and three or four other people, and he named the names, some of whom were being investigated. And one day he went out there, and the plans for the Lindbergh house were open on a table, and Hauptmann says, well, you don't have to worry about this. We're going to take care of Lindbergh. And apparently the architect, whose name was Bruno Wagner, had bid on that Lindbergh house and didn't get the job and was totally out of sorts over it. So they decided to get even. So that's one. That's another book coming out.
Wow. It's just not going to die.
I know.
All right. Well, we're at the half-hour break there, Jim. So we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back and talk a little bit more detail and perhaps some more theories. So you're listening to Good Morning Huntington, huntingtonchamberradio.com. We're going to come right back with more of Jim Davison and his new book about the Lindbergh trial right after this.
You're listening.
The way we broke up the responsibilities, my job was to locate the pictures, and then we would scan them, and then Mark and I would work on doing the captions together. Mm-hmm. And actually, the way we worked on it is I wrote the intro and captions, and then he went back and rewrote them, and that's what we ended up having as the final draft.
Okay.
So finding these pictures was exciting, but also not the easiest thing. Somebody had told me that I should check in the Jersey City library in their archives that they might have pictures there because Jersey City detectives were very involved with the trial and investigating the kidnapping. So I went up there, and this little woman came to me and said, how did you know about these pictures? Nobody has ever seen these pictures.
Wow.
And
Why wasn't she giving some of this away?
Yeah, she was not very forthcoming. And hopefully she's not listening to this broadcast because we were kind of devious when we did this.
Okay.
They had over 300 pictures.
Wow.
Related to the Lindbergh kidnapping. And she said, well, you're not going to take all 300 and just do your book with them. And I said, well, that's not what we were looking for. We were looking for pictures that we hadn't seen, pictures that would be relevant. Anyway, it ended up that I think we scanned maybe 25 or 30 pictures and maybe used 8 from the library. But then I knew, because I sit on the Huntington County Cultural and Heritage Commission, that Mildred Larrison, who used to be the county clerk and during the time of the Lindbergh trial was an assistant to the – she was only a teenager. She was an assistant to the county clerk, had taken a lot of pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And they were – when she passed away, they were given to the County Cultural and Heritage Commission. And they ended up in the Huntington County Archives, which is up on Route 12 in Flemington, in one of the buildings behind the library, sitting on a shelf. And outside of a couple of people, nobody had ever seen or used these pictures. There had to be 50 pictures there.
Wow.
And then I went to the Huntington County Historical Society and talked to Terry over there, the archivist. And he says, you know, it's really funny. We don't have many pictures at all from the Lindbergh kidnapping period. But just last week, somebody going in a flea market in New York State saw an entire packet of pictures from the Daily News photographs or photographers.
Mm-hmm.
And we just got them, and quite frankly, I haven't even looked at them. And I looked at, and there had to be about 50 or 60 there. Anyway, this kept going on and on like this. We got pictures at a Hopewell Museum, Hopewell Township, Princeton, private collections in New York City. It ended up that we found over 1,000 pictures that had never been seen. And under the format of Arcadia, the next problem we had was you only could use a little over 200.
Right.
So we had to go through and pick and choose not only the best pictures, but the ones that would tell the story in a chronological fashion.
Wow.
So we would decide on what the chapter was going. Well, it was a chronology chapter, so it wasn't that hard to figure out what came next. But
right.
We would lay maybe 100 pictures out on a table, and then pick out the ones that told the story the best and then start writing the captions and the pictures. So, you know, from the standpoint of all the books written on the kidnapping and trial, this is the only one that has ever been done as a pictorial history. So,
now, are you staying true to the actual story and the case itself? Or,
right, yeah.
Or do you start to bring up and constantly review the vagueness of it?
Are going just as the story developed, and, you know, from the – well, the first chapter of the book is about Lindbergh and how popular he was. I have a large memorabilia collection, and most of the pictures in there are of items that tell the story of – Lindbergh, how he became popular, and why he wanted to find seclusion. And then it goes into Highfields, the actual kidnapping, the search for the baby throughout the Saarland Mountains and into Hopewell Township and in that general area. And then after they find the baby in May of 1932, then the search for the kidnappers. And then picking up Bruno Hauptmann in the Bronx, extraditing him back to New Jersey, the trial. And then there were a series of appeals, and then he was eventually executed. We found great pictures of the state prison and pictures from inside the prison, the hearse that carried him out to Long Island. He was cremated out there. They had thousands of German-Americans lined the streets who thought he was innocent the entire time. And, you know, that's pretty much the book. There are no theories in there.
Okay.
Although over the years, Mark and I have compiled a list of 17 different theories of who kidnapped the Lindbergh baby. And it's interesting, you read some of these books that are out, and you get done reading, say, oh, man, that sounds like it's really what happened. And then you put that down and pick up another one totally opposite of that, and you come away feeling, yeah, that's what happened too. That, you know, Bruno Hauptmann sent a letter to Governor Hoffman, the last thing he ever wrote. And the last line of the letter, which is the last page in her book, his letter is the last page in her book, the last line is, I am totally innocent, and because of that, this is a case that will never die, and it'll be researched forever. And
I guess that explains it. I guess, why do you think that's true? Do you think that that's the reason that people keep investigating this, or is it the fact that technology is not as mature as it is today, and the media wasn't as mature as it is today, and so there always is that gape, that hole, that of possible other situations.
Well, I have to tell you, it's when you start looking into this kidnapping, it's a lot like who assassinated JFK. I speak a lot on Lindbergh. And I always like to draw that parallel because you can read as many books on the JFK assassination and walk away just as confused as when you started. But I recently gave a talk up in New Providence, and the topic of my talk was 12 theories of who kidnapped the Lindbergh baby. And let me tell you, they go the whole gamut from...
I don't know if that's a sign.
It's entering the twilight zone. They go the whole gamut from Lindbergh did it himself to Bruno Hauptmann acting as the lone kidnapper, which is what the state tried to prove. You know, it's very interesting when you get into this case. The New Jersey State Police from day one thought it was an inside job and part and – it was done by a gang. And that was their theory until they picked up Bruno Hauptmann 3 years later and they said, you know, we've been made to look like buffoons. We want to end this right now. And we're going to fry this guy and be done with it and put this behind us. They were actually investigating four or five other groups of people that, when you look at the investigative evidence, it seems like any of these people could have been involved. But because Haltman had the money in his garage, they said, no, he's not part of a gang, and extradited him, convicted him, and executed him.
Mm-hmm.
So, but there's tons of evidence. But going back to these other theories, I mean, he was doing it himself. He was part of a gang. There was a lot of thought that members...
What do you want to do when you grow up? When we were young, it's a question we were often asked. As we get older, our passions become clearer, our pursuits become careers, and if we're diligent, we begin to plan for the life we want to live. That's why, at Ameriprise Financial, we ask what's most important to you. Starting with our confident retirement approach, your Ameriprise Financial Advisor will ask questions that help you arrive at a customized plan that allows you to realize your goals today, tomorrow, and throughout retirement. With the right financial advisor, life can be brilliant. Call Michelle Heide and Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services Incorporated, today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 16 Lee Street, Units 1B and 1C in Clinton, New Jersey. The confident retirement approach is not a guarantee of future financial results. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services Incorporated, a registered investment advisor.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
New York State is now one of a handful of states and municipalities filing a lawsuit against the Trump administration for enforcing a rule that limits green cards for some migrants who need public assistance.
America is a nation of immigrants. It was built by immigrants, and generations have landed on the welcoming shores of Ellis Island with nothing more than a dream in their pockets.
New York Attorney General Letitia James. Now, James has sued the Trump administration on behalf of New York multiple times in the past 2 years. Air conditioners will be on full blast this week for much of the country. Forecasters are saying that 100 million people will be feeling the heat. Places like Boston, New York, Philadelphia, Washington, D.C. all could see triple digits, as well as the Southwest, where temperatures will hit near record highs in both Phoenix and Tucson. And you're listening to USA Radio News.
It is a horrible scenario, but it happens. Dennis writes about his wife. She was diagnosed with leukemia. In fact, she's a two-time survivor. And in the midst of all that, they ran up over $1 million in medical bills. Thankfully, they're Medishare members. And Dennis says they are so thankful for that, how others came together to meet their needs. And that's how so many Medishare members feel. This is not health insurance. It's different. You don't have to pay for things you don't believe in. And like Dennis found out, it just works. So if you join Medishare, not only do you save a lot of money, the typical family saves about $500 a month, but you know where your money's going each month. You're helping people, and if the time should come, they'll be helping and even praying for you. So yes, it's different, and as more than 400,000 people now know, when it comes to healthcare costs, different is beautiful. Find out more. Call 833-34-BIBLE. That's 833-34-BIBLE. 833-34-BIBLE.
J.P. Morgan Chase is contradicting President Trump's claims regarding who tariffs really affect. With the details, here's USA Radio Network's Chris Barnes.
America's biggest bank is claiming that President Trump's tariffs on Chinese imports will be costing U.S. families $1,000 a year. J.P. Morgan Chase releasing an analysis just a few hours ago finding the tariffs have already cost families $400 a year, and new tariffs scheduled to take effect on September 1st and in December will add another $600 to that.
Activists are calling on Juul to halt the sale of flavored e-cigarettes, arguing it encourages young people and children to vape. Outside Juul's headquarters in New York City, Democratic Councilman Mark Levin led a rally and says something needs to be done to keep kids safe.
We need to protect the children of this city and beyond. And we can do that by keeping these flavors out of their hands.
And you're listening to USA Radio News.
With a recession ending, if you've been putting off building your business, now is the time to act. General Steel will meet or beat any price on a pre-engineered steel building of the same size and specifications. Act now, before steel prices go up. So call us today for free information.
Call 800-965-1290. 800-965-1290, 800-965-1290.
Some Democrats are coming to freshman Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib's defense after she canceled a visit to the West Bank to see her family. Now, Tlaib and Congresswoman Ilhan Omar held a press conference Monday in Minneapolis where they discussed their side to the story and basically talked about why they were going with the group they went with in place of the group of 71 bipartisan congressmen and women who just came back from Israel. Republican Congressman Mark Green on that press conference held Monday.
Pretty much everything that they said in their